if you can find your Bible and find Genesis 28. If you have a bookmarker or if you have an index card, make sure you put it there so you don't lose that place, because we will be going back to it. There was some consternation in the first hour as people lost and then had to re-find and then lost and had to re-find. In fact, if you brought in two or three bookmarks, that might not be a bad idea for future weeks. All right, pop quiz. Last time we have been looking at the story of Esau and Jacob. Where did we leave that story? What had happened last week?
Rebecca's favorite son was going to
Laban. Okay. He had traded a bowl of soup for his brother's birthright, Jacob had. And now at what seemed to be the end of Isaac's life, Isaac had decided it was time to give his blessing, which God had said goes to Jacob, but he was going to quietly give it to Esau. There's evidence there that he knew he was going against God's will, but thought he could get away with it. And Jacob managed to trick Esau out of that blessing as well. God's will was done, but not in a very good way. Esau is now out for revenge. He's probably going to hold off until Isaac dies, but they didn't think Isaac was going to last much longer. He did last 43 more years, but he didn't know that at the time. And don't laugh too hard. I can remember standing at a bedside in a hospital in Tyler, Texas, with Barbara's grandmother, thinking we were basically saying goodbye for the last time. And I think she cooked us breakfast on trips to Texas at least three more times. So this sometimes happens. But anyway, that's what he thought. So Rachel had maneuvered Isaac into sending Jacob to her brother's family a long way away, ostensibly to choose a wife. They hadn't been very happy with Esau's choice of wives. And so he's getting ready to go. We join the story this week at Genesis 28, verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. The place he ends up is sometimes called Paddan Aram, and I think it must be somewhere close to Haran. The two seem to be used somewhat interchangeably in a couple of translations that I've seen. But anyway, he's going north and then across into the area that's toward where modern-day Iraq is, up through and past Syria. I want to ask first, what do you think Jacob was experiencing? And the whole of what we're going to talk about hinges on this thought. So I want you to think through this pretty well. What do you think Jacob was experiencing as he leaves? I think so. Fear, sadness, guilt so far. You're doing well, but you're not done.
Anxiety.
Okay. I might put anxiety alongside of this. It's not quite the same thing, but it's in that class.
He's getting away. Well, I think there's some relief in something you said last week, because at the beginning of 28, Isaac had finally maybe come to terms a little bit with the fact that Jacob was going to have the blessing versus Esau. So maybe there was the beginning of some not being a mama's voice as much anymore.
Growing up, maybe. Let me prime the pump a little bit. I think there are three major areas in which he was feeling something. And I don't know that you've articulated those areas yet. You're hitting some pieces, but I don't think you've yet hit the sort of organizing idea that captures a whole bunch of these. Let's review the bidding a little bit, as they say in bridge. What do we know about Esau as a man?
He's a big guy.
Don't know what he looked like, but that'd be our guess. He was an outdoorsman, a person who spent a lot of time outdoors hunting and all those kinds of things. Okay? What would have been a title? This is unfair, and it may not be right, but I think it's close to right. What might have been a good title for him or a good descriptor? A manly man. And if so, what pejorative title goes to Jacob? Mama's boy. Where did Jacob spend all of his time? In the tents, in and around where the bustle was, okay? You're getting close to it because he's not there anymore. What's he experiencing?
The outdoors. Culture shock.
Confusion.
Doubt.
He had been conniving to do all of this, getting the birthright, getting the blessing, thinking everything was going to be great on his terms, and then all of a sudden he's lost it all.
You ever played Battleship? You ever played Battleship? You just got a hit on number two. Stick with that idea and see if you can find a way of organizing that thought. What's he feel? I'll give you the first one. He's feeling alone. And he has not had this feeling in his whole life, I think. You hang around the tents, here's all the servants, here's all the bustle, here's all of that kind of stuff. He has probably never been alone in his life. Esau has, but not this guy. He's experiencing that.
Is there any indication of where he is on the spirituality spectrum with respect to his relationship with God himself, as opposed to his borrowing his father's?
There's clues, but not specifics. In fact, that's what this story is all about, is him beginning to wrestle with that. Okay? What's he experiencing? Big one, I think, is he's alone.
Now, I think you can put this one in here. I think you might put this one in here for a little while, but I don't think it stays as a dominant theme. I think these stay as the dominant theme. This is there as a temporary, this is there as the big one that hangs on it. Okay? Now, secondly, let me prime the pump a little more. What's he got with him? This is a rich kid from a rich family, right? What's he got with him? He's got 25 wagons, 150 servants, provisions for stately meals every night, right? What's he got with him? He's probably got what he can carry, which his mother has squirreled out and given to him and pushed him out the door. What's he experiencing? It's a different version of fear. Don't think that. I think you're getting close. He's experiencing, for the first time, the lack of resources for tomorrow. He might have enough food for that day. He might be able to carry enough food for a couple of days, but he doesn't have enough food for the rest of his life. He doesn't know how to hunt. He is feeling impoverished. Again, I'm giving you big words, and the things that you're talking about, several of these will fit in all three of these places, I think. Fear sort of, I think, goes all over the place. But I think he is feeling alone. I think he is, for the first time, beginning to wonder, what am I going to eat when this runs out? If that's tomorrow, if that's the next day. And I think he's feeling one more thing, and I think this may be the big one. What do you think else he's feeling?
He's responsible for himself.
Yeah. Got to find a way to say this in a way that organizes a bunch of stuff. What's the attitude towards him back home?
They hate him.
They hate him. Whose side do you think the servants are going to take? Whose side is Isaac going to take? Isaac's been tricked. Jacob may not know that Isaac has taken these steps. We can see some evidence in here, but the chances of Jacob knowing that, I doubt Jacob's been back to see Isaac. I doubt he's seen anybody. I think Rachel's got him hidden away. Okay. What kind of a welcome would he get if he turned around and went home? You get no welcome at all. He might be killed. Okay? What's he feeling?
Regret. Now you start to get there, I think. He's feeling abandoned. I don't think that's the word you want, but I think that's a piece of what he's feeling. That is a feeling that's imposed on him from others. But if you put guilt with that, I deserve it. Okay? I think the word that you might get here is a sense of loss of relationships. No welcome at home. That's gone. Whatever life I may have had in that place, that life is gone. Now, isn't this ironic? What he just did should have provided him with the wealth of his father at his beck and call for the remainder of his life. He should have been set for life. Here's the kid who should have been in charge of everything thrown out. Here's the kid who should have had access to all the resources. The resources are taken away. Whose they are and whose they're going to be, who knows? And lastly, this is the guy that everybody should have been looking to as the leader. Shunned, maybe a better word, and deservedly so might be the phrase that you put with it. Do you accept that as a premise? I think it fits where you would be. And I think you'll see in a moment it fits even better than you might think. So let's follow him.
You made a point at the end of last week's lesson.
Did I now?
Yeah.
I wonder what point that was. You're going to tell us, I hope.
He was 77 years old.
I think I don't know what to do with that. I have spent the week thinking about that.
But my point is,
he's not even middle-aged yet.
Kimberly's friend is feeling that stuff at 24. Jacob's feeling that stuff at 77 when he should have enough life experience to be able to cope with it better.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how to help you with this. Somehow, I think I have never read this before, ever, with the thought that he was 77. I can remember. That is the right phrase, isn't it? Them rocket pods are cold and dark. Yeah. Oh, he is being launched. And I don't know what to do except set the 77 aside, continue to think of him as 19 or 20 like we've always thought about him, and leave this on the back burner for God to explain it to us some other time. I don't know what to do with the 77. I'm sharing that with you because that just... The things he's doing are not the things I think of 77-year-old people doing. There's a cartoon. I collect cartoons. I don't know where they are, but I can sometimes remember them. There was a Wizard of Id. Do you know the Wizard of Id cartoon? Rodney the Knight is introducing the king to a peasant woman. And he says to the king, this peasant woman is 80 years old. And the king says, that's amazing. She has the skin of a 70-year-old. I thought that's one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. How do those really differ? He's being launched. What's he feeling? I think he's feeling alone, and now you can hang 50 things under that one. I think he is feeling a lack of confidence in the resources of tomorrow that borders on panic. And I think he is feeling shunned, abandoned, and understands that there's good reason for that.
Well, it seems to me like he's very ill-equipped to take care of himself, to protect himself from animals, and, I mean, he's prey. He's prey to...
You find out he is not without some abilities in those areas as the story progresses. but it sure starts that way. Let's take another sentence. I'm now at verse 11. When he had reached, my translation says, a certain place. What does yours say? What is that certain place? They don't tell you yet. He stopped for the night, comma, since. And it tells you why he stopped for the night. Why did he stop for the night? How does it word it? The sun had set. Okay? What happens when the sun had set? The light goes away. Once the sun is completely set, you've got a little bit of time before it's, as my mother used to say, pitch dark. But it's coming soon. Okay? So he stopped. Where did he stop? There, it says. He stopped there for the night. When he had reached a certain place, he stopped there for the night, says the sun set. Taking one of the stones of that place, he made it his pillow and lay down. What does it say? Mine says where he was. I don't think it's accidental that you hear this. Just some place. He stopped there. Where did he stop? Where he was. He went to sleep. Where he was. What did he use for a pillow?
A rock.
A rock that happened to be where he was.
He didn't know where he was.
I don't think so. I think he had a general idea. He was kind of sort of on the right road, going in the right direction. Verse 12. And the heart of the story suddenly explodes. He had a dream. In his dream, he saw?
My translation says a ladder. What does yours say?
Stairway.
Stairway to heaven is a phrase from Broadway. I would encourage you not to ponder that too long. Just stay with this. Any other translation? There's at least one that says staircase. And there's a commentator who says he would like to have the word be bridge, except the word bridge implies that you're not going up or down. And there's an up and there's a down that's associated with these other concepts. Okay? What did he see on this ladder? First of all, where was this ladder? It went from the earth to heaven. From where on the earth? From right here, where he was. What did he see on the ladder? God's angels going up and going down on it. How did he know they were God's angels?
Because God stood on the top.
Did he now? My translation differs from that. Let me warn you, there are two translation types out there. But let's go back to the angels. How do you know they were angels? Yeah, don't go too far, Joe. Don't go too far. Just stay with this for a second. How do you know they were angels?
It says the angels of God.
I know it says that. How do you know that? Abraham had visits from angels. Maybe Abraham had told him something about what angels look like. Maybe he could figure out from what the ladder was doing. Not too many ladders do this. Somebody's coming from up there going down. Here's a good guess. Okay? And angels going both ways. I don't know what that means. I think that's maybe worth some pondering. And he sees God himself. My translation puts God at the bottom of the ladder. Where does yours put God? Top of the ladder. How interesting. Let's read yours first. Teresa, you want to read yours? Read the translation. He saw a ladder reaching from earth to heaven.
He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord. Above it stood the Lord, and he said,
okay.
I am the Lord.
Good. My translation says at that point, and there was God standing beside him and saying. I don't know what made the translators of my translation read it that way. I just suggest there's two translations out there. One he's up top, one he's down here. Could he be at both places?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. God is not bound by space and time. Whatever he is saying, he's close enough, he doesn't have to shout. It doesn't say he's shouting, it says he says. And what does he say? He says the words that extend the covenant with Abraham, that has already extended to Isaac, it extends that covenant to him. I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, the God of Isaac. The ground on which you are lying, I will give to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as plentiful as the dust on the ground. You will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All the clans on earth will bless themselves by you and your descendants. Be sure I am with you. I'll keep you safe wherever you go. I will bring you back to this country, for I will never desert you until I've done what I have promised you. That is an extension of the covenant to Jacob. Up until this time, Jacob would have thought, I stole the birthright, I stole the blessing. All of a sudden, God is affirming that what he has taken is now his.
Isn't it amazing how disobedience, which is how he came about getting what he got, which if it was done according to God's way, it would have been done in an obedient way, led him to all of these negative emotions, yet God was still so faithful with his promise, even through the disobedience.
That's number one of the summary points. Number two of the summary points. God is still reaching to people even when their sin would seem to have pushed them apart. Okay?
What's Jacob's response? Verse 16.
Wakes up.
He awoke from his sleep. What time was it? Starts with I.
Don't know.
I don't know. But I do know that at the first of verse 18, it says early the next morning he starts to do something, and he's not doing that now, so it sounds like it's still the middle of the night. He woke up from his sleep, and he said something. What did he say?
Surely the Lord was in this place,
and I didn't know it. And I just changed her translation, and I've got to fix that. What did she say? Read it again, Cindy.
Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it.
Did you hear the word I changed?
Said,
I said was, and that's not what Jacob said. Jacob says is. The ladder is gone. He could have said, huh, God was here. But he doesn't. He says God
is here.
There is a difference. He does not recognize this as a moment which has passed. He recognizes it as a revelation of what continues. That is a lot to hang on one little word, but I think it'll hold the strain. God is in this place, and I didn't know it. Why didn't he know it? Can we infer what his thinking was?
Do you suppose he thinks that God has also abandoned him because of his behavior?
Well, one of you said a little while ago, maybe he's experiencing relief because he's gotten away. What has he gotten away from? The threats of Esau for revenge, the anger of his father for the deception,
the humdrum and routine of this.
The dominance of his mother.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so.
But
maybe
also,
he's probably old enough to realize that. How old did you say what?
Maybe his eyes are opened up to God being there now. Yeah. Conference this weekend. Like, and the angel.
Yeah.
Was there?
So, help me now. Is God going to be with him when he gets to Haran or Paddan Aram? Has he thought far enough to know the answer to that question? I don't think so.
Also, I think that he associated God with his dad. And so when he left his dad, he probably thought he was leaving God. And maybe if he had known that God was going to be there at Bethel, he wouldn't have gone there because he was trying to get away.
I think that's where I'm leaning. That if he had known God was there, he probably, there's a good chance he would have said, well, I'll just bypass that place.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not sure. I'm suggesting there's some evidence here, just sort of the way he says it. And I'm going to go back now and emphasize this. Where was he?
Somewhere.
He was where he was. And he says, huh, God is in this place. So tomorrow, when I'm in this other place, is God going to be there? I don't think he's had that thought yet.
Except
except that God calls us to him. He says, I will not leave you.
Bravo, and exactly. God is saying things to him, and I'm thinking he's still processing them. I don't think he has yet internalized what God has said. God has said it clearly. And I'm inviting you to ponder whether or not Jacob might now be himself processing this. Okay, I heard what God said, but that was in a dream. And he's struggling, you know. Did I hear that right? What does it mean? At the least, it means God is in this place and I didn't know it. But what else does it mean? I don't know. He's still thinking it through. Right? What is Jacob dealing with? Help me. He's alone. He's dealing with loneliness. He's dealing with insecurity about the future. How am I going to live? How am I going to feed myself? I've got food and clothing for maybe one change of clothing, enough food for 2 days. What am I going to do after that? And I burn these bridges behind me. Let me take you two directions very quickly. One is, what was the condemnation that people experienced for the Tower of Babel? I didn't think of this one, but somebody in the first hour asked a question, and it's a great question. What were they condemned for in the Tower of Babel?
Trying to
build this by force of men, as opposed to accepting what God has built. Interesting thought. I'll allow you to ponder that a while. Okay. Second half, if you take the picture of bridges, he's just burnt his. I can't remember now if it was in here or in the first hour that I said the flame of the burning bridge is still lighting the path behind him. He's burned his bridges to home pretty well. And here he is, and oh my goodness, God is here. God is saying things that I think he's not yet able to completely process. If you watch, he processes it a little bit further before the story ends. But I don't think it comes quite yet. Early the next morning, let's keep going, verse 17. What was his initial response? He was afraid.
That suggests that some of you who might have been thinking relief was a stronger experience than this, you might have been right up till this point. And all of a sudden at this point he realizes, I don't get away from home quite that easily.
At least a part of home, a very important part of home, my father's God, is still here. And I didn't know it. I thought I'd left all that behind, is a surmise that we might be able to make. Okay? He was afraid and said, how awe-inspiring this place is. This is nothing less than the abode of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Listen, this place is awe-inspiring. This place is the place God dwells. This place is the gate of heaven. Do you hear him saying that? I'm hearing him saying, this place, this place, this place. So now he walks 1 mile away, and what happens? This place is still back there. What did God say? Wherever you go, I'm there. What's Jacob saying? This place, where I just happened by chance to be. Take a little time out. Can you look at the bottom of this little section, verse 19? Look at verse 19. Go all the way to the end of the verse. What was the name of this place? Luz. What did he name it? Do you guys know enough about Hebrew to know Beth means house and El means God? That the abode of God that was in the middle of that phrase that we just read, that's he's giving it that new name, right? Abraham has been to this spot before. When Abraham was in this spot before, God appeared to him and he worshiped God. He set up an altar to God. There are commentators who think it's probably a little too nice a story. But that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't true. That in the dark, he may have chosen to sleep right where Abraham's altar was. And that the stone he used might have been a stone off of Abraham's altar. It's certainly in the same vicinity as that. Later, he'd probably put all that together. How awe-inspiring this place is. This is nothing less than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had used for his pillow and set it up as a pillar. Do you get the play on words? I think there might be a similar play on words in Hebrew, but I don't know that for sure. Pouring oil over the top of it, he named the place Bethel, but before that, the town had been called Luz. Okay, so far?
All of a sudden, it's a town.
Again, I think he probably was within sight, maybe, of the village, but had chosen not to go there. I asked the first hour a question. Where did he spend this first night? Did he spend it in a tavern full of the sound of convivial laughter, the gaiety of people enjoying each other and enjoying food and beverage? Mm-mm. But he is close enough to some settled place that probably he could see some sign of that existence. But it is interesting how it names that. Now, I want to take you to a couple of places as we work through. This is a good time for you to put a bookmark at this spot. This is a good time for you to put a bookmark at this spot. I want you to go to Psalm 139. I want to go to verse 7. Psalm 139, verse 7. What has Jacob just said? Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't have a clue. The psalmist asked, "Where shall I go to escape your spirit? Where shall I flee from your presence? If I scale the heavens, you are there. If I lie flat in Sheol, there you are. If I speed away on the wings of the dawn, if I dwell beyond the ocean, even there your hand will be guiding me. Your right hand will be holding me fast." The sanctuary choir for this church sang a setting for this psalm about a week or two ago and captures the thoughts of this very powerfully, I think. There's a contrast here. I want you to look in Job. Don't lose. If you've got a second bookmark, put it here, because we're going to come back to Psalm 139. Okay? But I want you to go to Job chapter 23. Job chapter 23. Remember what Job was experiencing. Job is immediately before Psalms. If you found Psalms, back up one book, and you'll find the book of Job, chapter 23. I'm looking at verse 8. Job is speaking. Job is speaking. And what does he say? He says, "If I go to the east, God's not there. If I go to the west, I still can't see him. If I seek him in the north, he is not to be found, invisible as ever if I turn to the south. And yet, he knows every step I take." What has Job just said? There are times when it looks like I can get away from him, but it's just that I can't see him. Now, let's go and look at God's point of view. Go the other side of Psalms, past Isaiah to the book of Jeremiah. Find Jeremiah 23. This is God's view on all of this. Jeremiah chapter 23. I'm looking at verse 23. Jeremiah 23. God is speaking. Verse 23. "Am I a God when near and not a God when far away? Can anyone hide somewhere secret without my seeing him? Do I not fill earth and heaven?" God demands. So we've seen all three sides. Let's go back to Psalm 139. I want to read just a little bit more. Verse 1, "Lord, you examine me and know me. You know when I sit down, you know when I rise up. You understand my thoughts from afar. You watch when I walk or lie down. You know every detail of my conduct. A word is not yet on my tongue before you, Lord, know all about it. You fence me in behind and in front. You have laid your hand upon me. Such amazing knowledge is beyond me, a height to which I cannot attain." And then the words that we read follow. Verse 11, I will say, let darkness cover me and the night wrap itself around me, but even darkness to you is not dark. Night is clear as the day. You created my inmost self. You knit me together in my mother's womb. For so many marvels I thank you. A wonder I am, and all your works are wonders. You know me through and through. My being holds no secrets from you. When I was formed in secret, textured in the depths of the earth, your eyes could see my embryo. In your book, all my days were inscribed. Every one that was fixed is there. How hard for me to grasp your thoughts. How many, God, there are. Verse 23. God, examine me and know my heart. Test me and know my concerns. Make sure that I am not on my way to ruin. Guide me on the road to eternity. The writer of Psalms understands something of what Jacob experienced that night. Now, two more things before we finish. I'm going to just give you some references and let you go there and look for these later. John 1, verse 51, and the context around it. John 1, verse 51. Jesus is gathering his disciples. He meets Nathanael. Nathanael and he have a conversation, and out of that conversation, Jesus says to him, you're recognizing me as Messiah because of very little. You're going to see me standing between heaven and earth and God's angels rising and falling, descending and ascending on me. He just described himself as that ladder or that stairway in that passage. Acts chapter 7, Stephen's final vision just before he was stoned to death. He sees something of that same picture with God standing in heaven waiting to welcome him. This is a picture. This picture of the ladder pervades the whole of the Bible. Several places, several important places it shows up. And there's even a little song. Do you know that song? I am climbing Jacob's ladder. I am climbing Jacob's ladder. Every rung goes higher, higher. Every rung goes higher, higher. Good little song that some children learned. Now, I want to come back to this and try to finish this way. Look at verse 20. In response to all of this, Jacob makes a vow. One commentator pointed out this is the first recorded vow in the Bible. May not be the first vow that has ever been made, but it's the first one that's recorded. I think that's right. I don't remember any others. God has made covenants with people, but there's no record of people making vows. Not before this point. I want you to read Jacob's vow. This is verse 20, 21, 22, back in Genesis 28, where I hope you have that bookmark. And what I want to ask is, what do you think of this vow? The commentators are confused on this one. Can you tell why? They want to praise Jacob for, in response to this vision, having the good sense that maybe I ought to do something different. Maybe I ought to take a different attitude. But you look at the vow and you sort of recoil a bit. Why? Do you have the same reaction that some of the commentators have? What's bad about this vow? It's all about me, 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 and you know, if you do this, if you do this, if you do this, then maybe I'll call you God.
Well, but it also is that maybe for the first time in his life he's recognizing that maybe God can do this.
And I think that's where the commentators who feel like praising him go. He is stretching spiritually in a way that wouldn't have happened without that vision. There are good things you can say. Please hear them. There's also some things that indicate Jacob still has not developed spiritually as far as he needs to. But let's look closer at the vow. What are the ifs? What's the first one? Read just the first one.
What were his big problems? He was alone. What's his first if? If you will be with me, that takes away this one. What's the second one?
Provide.
You will provide clothes and food. And then watch the third one carefully. I picked up on your words. no welcome at home. Read the third one. What does it say? May I return, if you let me return to my Father's house in peace. If I find no welcome at home, turning into a welcome back home. Then, Jacob seems to me to have recognized his deepest problems. He seems to have recognized God is his only hope of dealing with those problems. And however imperfectly he's doing it, he's beginning to work on building a relationship with God, something that I think had not been important to him up until that time.
But he doesn't. He's thinking it's good, and you would think he would turn around and go home to test it out. He doesn't do that. His faith's not quite that strong.
Nope.
Well, but I think he's also being obedient to God.
Well, he's being obedient to what God said. Yeah. God says, I'm going to give you all this land. Okay? Verse 15, be sure I am with you. Doesn't say I will be with you. He says I am with you. That's all. That's almost God's name, if you remember. I am with you. I will keep you safe wherever you go and bring you back to this country. It's almost like he heard God saying, you're going to go further, but I will bring you back. About four chapters from now, he'll come back into Bethel. And he will come back a very different person than he is right now. But he has started the journey. What do people deal with? They deal with these same three problems. And God has provision for all three. God is in places we don't expect to find him. He can still love us and still bless us and still bless others through us even when we have failed him. He sometimes delays to stretch us, to grow us. And he can bring comfort when we're unprepared to receive it. I think the last thing Jacob expected was a visit from God. And yet, here it comes. There's a message of comfort for us in all this. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the words we've read. And I pray that you would impress on our hearts the parts of these that we need to hear for our own spiritual journey to take another step with you. I pray that you would be with each person here and with those who ordinarily are with us but are away today. We pray especially our gratitude for the gift of your Son that we celebrated this Easter time. And I pray that you would make all of us aware of the life that the Spirit lives in our hearts. All this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.